We cannot always build the future for our youth, but we can build our youth for the future. President Franklin Roosevelt. Welcome to Books on Air, the podcast that you don't want to miss. You're about to get a sneak peek at what goes on behind the scenes with authors. You'll find out their secret recipe for creating a book. They'll tell you where they get their ideas, and you will get the inside scoop on their next project. Want to know more? Okay, we'll tell you where to find them on social media. Are you ready? Okay, let's meet the author. Joining me today is Dr. William Kermes, and he's here to talk about his children's book, The Year the Snow Didn't Melt. Now, Dr. Kermes has a long and distinguished career as an osteopathic physician. He served on numerous committees and boards, as well as held local and regional offices in his profession. Currently, he's working with the Disability Determination Service. But he's here today to talk about his children's book, The Year the Snow Didn't Melt. Bill, welcome.
Thank you very much for that nice introduction.
Well, it's my pleasure. I'm really excited about your book because I think it's so important and I think the message is so important. Often, there's a story behind how a book comes to be written. Your grandson played a role in this book being written. Tell me about that.
Sure. Well, both my children, I have a son and a daughter, they're grown up, of course, and Evan, who's my teenage grandson, I read those kids, when they were kids, I read a lot of goodnight book stories, you know, and a lot of them, I said to myself, you know, this isn't that great. I could probably do better than this, you know, just in my head. And sure enough, one year, I think I'm pretty sure it was the winter of 09-10, we had an amazingly harsh New England winter, and it snowed a couple of feet before Thanksgiving. But later on in that year, I was up and we had so much snow. I had about 3 feet of snow on my roof, and I thought my house was going to fall in. So I went up there and shoveled off the roof, and it took me, you know, a couple of days. And in the meantime, I was thinking, what if this doesn't end? What if we have another and then another snowstorm and then another snowstorm? What are we going to do? You know, what if the winter just doesn't end? You know, when we live up here, we think of the coming of spring as, you know, a new life because the harsh winter is over. Well, what if it didn't end? Then I put two and two together. I said, you know, I think I can write a better book. I think I can write a book about this. And I wonder if I could just get it published. You know, maybe I should just try to get it published and see what happens. And that's when I went on the internet and Googled, you know, whatever. And that's kind of how it happened.
Now, what's the bottom line message for the book? It's climate change, and a children's book about climate change. That's the thing that intrigued me so much, that you chose climate change. I love the experience that was the thing that sort of pushed you over the proverbial edge. I would never think about writing a children's book about climate change.
Well, you know, there's a lot of talk about climate change and global warming, no matter what year it's been in between 10 years ago, approximately the time I wrote this book, and now this, everybody's still talking about it. So what do the kids think? You know, because they're listening to their peers and they're listening to their elders and their parents, and they're all concerned about it. And so the kids can't do really much about it, but they may not understand it. They may have their own ideas about what's going on. And it's a scary topic, and you can make it as scary as you want because we don't know what's going to happen with climate change and global warming and the rising of the oceans and the melting of the ice caps and the hurricanes and all this stuff. It's very scary for kids. And if they read about it and they find out that it's maybe just a cyclic thing and it's scary, but if you understand it, it's not that scary. And it just may give them a little different insight into a situation that we all have to deal with. And they're going to have to deal with this stuff once my generation is gone. They're the future. They're the ones that have to deal with this stuff. And so let's tell them a little bit about the good side, or the not the humorous side, but the lighter side of it. And they're gonna be okay.
I read an article that you sent me about the positive spin that you have on what the future generation will be able to do. And I really liked the message that you had in that article, because you talked about, back in our day, it was President Kennedy was talking about going to the moon, and all of those things seemed so far removed from reality. And I think there's a little bit of that sense that happens with something like climate change, because it's something that you can't touch. You can't exactly see it. I mean, we all are experiencing all of these crazy, the fires in California, and the fact that all that ash is going up and settling in the polar ice caps, and the hurricanes. Oh my gosh, I live in Texas, and it's like there's some sort of homing device right now for those hurricanes. They're all headed into the Gulf. What's going on with that? I think that your message about the positive future and the really brilliant kids that will be coming up in that positive future, and they'll be the ones who may harness those volcanoes and figure out how we can use that in a positive way, or they may figure out how to change the course of that hurricane. There's a forest fire in California. How can we get that hurricane to go dump some water on that forest fire and put it out? I really thought that was a very positive message.
Well, the other part of that message that you read in that article was the quote by Carl Sagan. And Carl Sagan, his quote was, "Somewhere, something incredible is waiting to be known." And the future of these kids that, are reading this book, they've got all sorts of technological things going on. The Internet of Things, 5G, robotics, the Internet, and it goes on and on and on. They've got all these technological weapons that they can use to deal with these changes, and I think they're going to be fine. We're already seeing electric cars and electric self-driving trucks, and who thought, 10, even 5 years ago, that we would be that close now to, a green footprint and, doing away with fracking and, all these things that are very positive. In California, they have these restrictions on emissions. They've always had, it seems like they've always had those. But on the other side of that coin, one volcano spews out so much material and gases and horrible toxic things that it's much more than every car that's ever been driven since they were invented. So we can't do anything about that.
You're absolutely right. And the experience of going to Kilauea and looking down in that crater. And once you look into the eye of the monster, you have a whole different feeling for what those volcanoes are doing. And that whole ring of fire idea that's around the United States and the huge volcano that's underneath Yellowstone. When you think about all of those kinds of things, it can be a little bit intimidating. One of the things that I really thought about your book was homeschool. So many parents right now are, because of the virus, they have their kids at home. Many parents have chosen to do homeschool. I would think that a book like yours, The Year the Snow Didn't Melt, would be a book that they would want to bring into the home, read it, and it would start a conversation with the parent and the child about climate change and what's happening and is it real and those kinds of things. I'm a former teacher, so what I've discovered being a former teacher is that you never see the world exactly the same way. You always see educational opportunities lurking around every corner. And your book really struck me that way. I also think it would be valuable for any school, any classroom. You could bring this in and use Google Earth, where you would look at what's happening. And maybe you look at those volcanoes and you use Google Earth to find out where they are. Or you look at different countries and see what kinds of changes have occurred over a period of time. You could use that in social studies. I mean, it just struck me that there are so many applications in which your book would fit.
I got a coffee table book one year from somebody for Christmas, and it was entitled Earth from Space. And it showed the polar ice caps in over a period of time. You know, when the first satellites went up there and took pictures of the globe and put those pictures together, and then five years later, and there's no question it's that the ice caps are getting smaller and smaller all the time. The Northwest Passage has opened up. And that was another thing that got me going about, you know, this stuff is for real. You can't dispute the fact that the oceans are rising and the polar caps are the Arctic is getting smaller and the polar bears don't have places to go and things like that. And that was another reason that I wanted to say something, and rather than write some scientific paper about some, you know, bunch of science together, I would say, yeah, let's tell the kids about this and see what they say. And I'll tell you, that teacher of the class that I spoke at, the first one, I've done many of those, she had the kids write me thank you notes. And they were all in colored paper and crayon and, you know, big spaces, big letters. And you should, I mean, the things that they were saying, like, why, how did you write this book? What made you write this book? And some of them were really funny. And one student wanted to become a meteorologist. And she sent me this wonderful thank you note about how now she's even want to be a meteorologist even more. And the kids took a lot. They took something out of that little time frame that we had because their class was talking about weather and, you know, climate change and weather and global warming. That all falls right together. So they thought it was great. And I did a number of other because some of my patients were teachers and we wanted to get the book out there. And we did a number of classroom, not necessarily, they weren't videoed or anything. They weren't on TV or anything like that, but they were just, you know, sitting there and listening and then ask questions later on. And it was, some of them were even up into fourth and fifth grade. And who knows what they're thinking? Who knows what those kids are doing today? They're probably computer whizzes right by now.
I think you've got a part of the book that you'd like to share with our listeners. Is that right?
Yes. It's the first page or two of, and I've already talked a little bit about that first storm, but I'll read the first page. It says, starts out with 1 year. By late October, even before Halloween, the snow began to fall. It seemed strange to see snow on the ground along with trick-or-treaters. The temperature had gotten a lot colder than normal, a lot sooner, and everyone needed to wear his or her winter clothes. So page two, I'll just read this in addition here. By Thanksgiving, there was plenty of snow for snowball fights at the football games. Now, a little side story on the illustrations of the book. I had never met this lady, and I had tried to get some local people to do some illustrations for me, but I couldn't find them. Couldn't find anybody who wanted to do it. Some of them thought I was joking, that I was going to write a book.
Wow.
So the publisher assigned a woman who I'd never met to do the illustrations. Well, apparently she had never been to a football game, which to me sounds outrageously crazy. But when she contacted me and said, well, I don't know what that is. I don't know what that looks like.
Oh, dear.
So, she didn't know a football game. You know, she couldn't picture a stadium with people inside the stadium looking at the game and then throwing snowballs back and forth, you know, into the stands. And then the people in the stands were throwing the snowballs at the players and everybody was having a big snowball fight. She could not grasp that, the picture of that. So I had to try to describe all that to her so she could. And then so she sent me a few, you know, rough drafts, and I sent them back. No, that's not what I'm talking about. And so then I had to send her some actual photographs of college football games, you know, that were showed different aspects of different angles, you know, people doing things. And but nobody was throwing snowballs. I just said, instead of football, pretend they're throwing snowballs. So she eventually got it right, but that slowed things down quite a bit with the back and forth of trying to describe a baseball diamond and a football stadium.
Well, I thought the illustrations were charming. She has a way with the way she does her drawings that I think would draw kids in. Did you finally like what she did for you?
Oh, very definitely. And yeah. We got a lot of compliments and people saying, well, who is this girl? And I said, I don't know her. I've talked with her. I've texted with her. And, you know, I know a little bit about her, but she's not local from here. And I think she's from Indianapolis, up there out in the Midwest someplace. But she did a whimsical job. And everybody liked it. And they all asked me about it. Well, how did you get that picture in there? And well, you know, that was what she did, and we agreed to it. And it you know, there's all sorts of stages you go through when you're writing a book, and it has to be edited and it has to be perfect. And when they send you the first copy, if it's not absolutely perfect, if it's missing an apostrophe or a comma, or it's got to go back and redone over again, and that takes time. And I was the first year I started with this, trying to market this for Christmas in June, and we weren't even close to being ready to get the first copy of this by then. And it went into the next year, maybe even the next year after that, but 2010 is when it was actually published. I think it's got the date.
I think people really don't realize how much there can be, how involved it can be to get a book published. I know that we have piqued the interest of our listeners, and I'm sure that they're saying to themselves, where is the book available? You can always find the book most of the time on Amazon. And I always check Amazon before I say these words, so that if our listeners go to Amazon, I want to make sure everything's there and it works. Let me give you the specific title of the book, and let me spell Bill's name for you. Go to Amazon.com, and there's a big search feature. It's a really long rectangle at the very top. And just type in The Year the Snow Didn't Melt by William, W-I-L-L-I-A-M, Kermes, K-I-R-M-E-S. Then just click, and it takes you right to his book. And up in the upper right-hand corner, there are words that say, look inside. If you click on that look inside, it lets you peek inside the book, and you can get a little bit of a feel of what the book is really like. Now, you have an author page on Facebook, Bill. Let's tell our listeners how to find you on Facebook.
My goodness, you're asking the wrong person, I guess. But I know you go into Facebook and you just put my name in there.
That's it.
That's all. It's simple. More simple than I thought originally. But you can find my page by just putting my name in there. I don't think there's anybody else that's got that name. So with the book.
Now, you've got a YouTube video that I've watched a couple of times, and I really thought it was very striking. Let's tell our listeners how to find that YouTube video. Do they just put your name in when they go to YouTube, or do they put in the title of the book? How do they find that?
Right, title of the book, The Year the Snow Didn't Melt, and it comes up. And I hadn't seen that in a while, and we watched that the other night. We watched the other video of the Chronicle spot, and we watched that that other one where I'm walking out into my backyard. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes. And the snow is unbelievable. I looked at that and I thought, oh my gosh. And the idea, idea for me is the idea that we could be approaching another ice age. I hate the cold. And so the idea, I'm sitting there, I'm looking at this snow that looks like it comes up to the middle of my thighs at least, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, if another ice age occurred, this is the kind of stuff that someone would be dealing with. I thought the video was really... It's great. If somebody is teaching this as a unit in school, they need that YouTube video because it really brings the point home with a punch in the knowledge, I suppose, what it would really be like with that much snow.
Yeah, apparently people thought it was interesting because my daughter called me one afternoon. And she said, you know that video you did about the snow, you know, walking out in the backyard? And I go, yeah. She goes, that got 77,000 hits. And I go, what are hits? And she says, people looked at that 77,000 times. I go, so what? What's the big deal about that? She goes, that's a big deal. So not too long ago, we checked it again, and it was up to over 80,000 hits.
So well, realize probably three of those are mine. So,
well, 70,000 of them are mine. No, I'm just
kidding. I love it. All right, Bill, I always like to let the author have the last word about their book. And I think your message is so important, and that the audience that you have chosen to direct the message to is such an important audience. What do you want to leave the people who read the book? If it's grandma or grandpa reading the book, if it's a parent reading the book to a child, if it's a teacher, if it's kids who are reading the book and doing a book report, what's the big message that you really want them to leave with?
Well, I want the kids to know that they can become anything, and everything starts as an idea. And we all have an imagination, and these kids have a lot of thoughts going through their mind. And if they want to write these things down, that's great. But any idea that they have, they are the future. They're the ones that are going to have to deal with climate change. They're going to have to deal with global warming. They're going to be able to use the technology that we never thought was even possible years ago when we were growing up, when we were their age. We just barely got TV when we were their age. And it's so exciting that they're coming up in the world at this time. And there's going to be unimaginable things happening, and they're going to be at the forefront of that. And inventing things and writing things, and hopefully if they come up with an idea, they can write a book about it, and anybody can, if I can do it, anybody can do it. And they're the future, and we hope they make the best of it.
I think it's terrific that you're able to tell a story about the young lady who was inspired to be a meteorologist. You know, there will be kids who will read this book and they will be inspired in some way to maybe look forward in their STEM classes, maybe pursue a scientific career as a result of the book that you've written about climate change. Thank you so much for being our guest today on Books on Air and sharing this important message.
Well, you're very welcome. It's my pleasure.
I have to end this with the Carl Sagan quote. I want to repeat it one more time. Somewhere, something incredible is waiting to be known. Remember, you can find Bill's book on Amazon. Remember that his last name is Krimis. It's WILLIAMKIRMES. And the name of the book, The Year the Snow Didn't Melt. You've been listening to Books on Air, the podcast brought to you on WebTalkRadio.net. You can also hear this podcast on iTunes as well as on iHeartRadio. I'm Suzanne Harris, and I do hope that you'll join our next Books on Air podcast. Remember, you never know who's going to be here, and you never know what we're going to talk about. Thank you so much for listening.